What's up, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, David and I do drugs in the news. We talk about a guy who was popped for bringing GBL and steroids into Australia. Swear to God, that's like the last place I think that you want to get in trouble for anything steroid related. Dave tells us about drinking your own urine and all the wonderful benefits. No, he's not really a fan, but he did have somebody ask him about it. After that, we go to break, come back. We've got a bunch of listener questions. We're going to tackle all that. We're going to do it right now here on Drugs and Stuff. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. Dave Crossland, what is up, brother? How you doing?
Okay, been a bit shit week in the world of bodybuilding.
Yes, sir, it has.
Yeah. With Luke's passing last, well, basically the evening after we recorded last Tuesday night, and then John Meadows' cardiac incident yesterday.
Yeah. So I heard John was out of surgery yesterday, and, you know, we're all pulling for him. It's been a rough go. Plus, I feel like emotions are high, you know, being the whole pandemic and all that in general. I think that doesn't help, does it?
No, I think people are very sensitive, and I think as well with both people, it was quite unexpected, and I think that's probably added to it.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, if I died tomorrow, most people would turn around and go, well, I'm not fucking surprised. Look at the drugs he's done, the daft kit.
Yeah, we get people on YouTube that are saying, like, oh, Dave's going to die. People say that on our YouTube.
Most people say, I'm surprised Dave's still alive. Well done for lasting this long. But, you know, and I openly handed, and obviously that would be expected, and it wouldn't be a surprise if it happened for most people. But obviously John, very knowledgeable, very healthy individual, and so as a result, that's shocking. And Luke, again, particularly because obviously it was a suicide, that was quite shocking as well. I must admit, my condolences go out to both Luke and his family, well, obviously his family, his children, and everyone that was close to him. Yeah. And my best wishes go out to John as well. I hope he makes a speedy recovery.
Absolutely. I've heard some more of the details with John. I'm not sure how much of it is public, so I don't want to get into it too much. But from what I understand, there was a family history. So there is heart attacks.
I think with these sort of things, it's annoyed me a bit with the Luke one. There's a time and a place to dissect these.
Yeah.
And being effectively public figures, they will always be open to people questioning whys and whats and how fors and all the rest of it.
Absolutely.
But, God, you know, at least give family time to come to terms with what's happened and give them time to come to terms with happening in John's case. And obviously, you know, in Luke's case, give his family time to bury him before these conversations start.
Yeah.
I think conversations sometimes need to be had because it can help other people that may be in a similar situation.
Sure.
But I do believe that picking over the bones of one of these incidents within 2 or 3 days of it happening is a bit, well, I think it's highly disrespectful, personally, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm hoping, you know, my thoughts are with John. My hope is that he can shed some more light on this. You know, as I was saying, I know that he does have a family history. Both of his parents had heart attacks at a young age. And that, you know, maybe there's something, you know, his wife mentioned this potential clotting issue. Maybe there's something that they can say, hey, this was this thing we didn't realize, and now we realize it, and he's going to live a long, happy life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe in John's case, it technically should have happened a long time ago, and actually his lifestyle's extended it way beyond what it would normally have been.
Sure. So
if he's saying both his parents suffered with cardiac incidents at a young age, John's not exactly a spring chicken.
Yeah, I think he's like 46 now, or 47 maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so he's prime age for starting to have cardiac issues if you're genetically predisposed to him.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's not get into that one. Otherwise, same shit, different day.
All right. Well, in that case, Dave, I've got some drugs in the news.
Okay.
I've got a couple stories here. GHB. What's the legal stance on GHB in the UK? Because it used to be a very popular bodybuilding thing for those of you who didn't
GHB, oh God, now, 2000, 2003, 2004, somewhere around there, GHB was made a Class C, equivalent to your Schedule 3.
Okay.
However, they are generally quite aggressive with sentencing.
Okay.
Because it is used or associated with date rape.
Right, right.
The America has a bit of a it's doubly scheduled in America, so it's Schedule 3 in America, but supply or trafficking, as you guys like to call it, of it is Schedule 1.
Oh, that doesn't make sense to me. What about GBL? Is that in the same kind of boat? Because that's like a precursor, from what I understand.
You know what? I don't know. I've looked at it.
Pretty sure. Gamma, butra, lactone. I guess from what I understand, it's like once you use GBL, it converts to GHB in your system like instantaneously.
I know a lot of English law will accommodate for substructures and precursors, and it will say, or any substance that converts to or precursor to or, you know, or division of or subsidiary of. So I would imagine it's probably covered by exactly the same rules and regulations over here. I'm not so sure how the state works with subsidiaries in that way.
Okay. So this is something that you don't want to get caught with, A, and B, if there's any place I would not want to get caught with steroids or anything related to steroids or drugs, it would be Australia. They seem like some rough sons of guns over there.
Their regulations around particularly steroids were born out of a survey or an understanding that steroids were being majorly controlled by the biker gangs. Australia has a big problem with bike gangs and organized crime. No, the sort of Hell's Angel type things over there are very heavily into organized crime.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So it's been a legal issue or a group of people over there that they've specifically targeted laws towards.
Okay.
And the steroid law was given Schedule 1, so same as cocaine and heroin, because it was believed that it was trafficked and controlled by the biker gangs.
Oh, so they're just trying to really crack down on them.
There has been... Since there's been a couple of movements to try and get it down regulated.
Yeah.
So far unsuccessful, but there was a study published over there that confirmed that the initial findings on the fact that the steroid market was controlled by biker gangs was incorrect.
Okay.
And that they had very little, if effectively no influence on the steroid market. And that was then pushed as a move to try and get the steroid downgraded. And this was coming from harm reduction services, because as a Schedule 1, it makes it more difficult for harm reduction services to engage with users because of the level of severity of punishment associated with the drug. Harm reduction in Australia is pretty shit. And generally, the establishment is very, very anti-steroids, and doctors are very, very anti-steroids, and it really does get a very extreme view over there in general.
Okay, so we have a case here. This is published. This is published about a week ago. Police charge man over importation and supply of GBL and anabolic steroids. This is in Australia. A man will face court today charged as part of an ongoing joint investigation into the alleged importation of GBL and anabolic steroids. Last year, State Crime Command's Organized Crime Squad, together with Australian Border Force, established, that sounds pretty hardcore, they established Strike Force McDougal to investigate and the supply of importation of prohibited drugs. So this guy,
Scott,
yeah.
Have you ever seen a program, an English program called The Magic Roundabout?
No. Good?
When we finish this today, go on YouTube, type in Magic Roundabout and Dougal the dog.
Dougal the dog?
And then you'll see how That name just made me laugh, like, because all I could think of was Dougal the Dog of Magic Roundabout. Anyone who's English will understand what I'm going on about.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
It was a very trippy, hippie cartoon thing.
Huh. Okay. Well, this is Strike Force McDougal. So anyway, yes. What does he have here? It says on December 19th, the officers intercepted mail and air cargo consignments from Hong Kong. Let's see. They tested this stuff for GBL. It was positive. They had, allegedly containing 3.4 liters of GBL and performance-enhancing drugs, including testosterone powder and anabolic steroids. Is 3.4 liters of GBL a lot, or is that a little? Like GB, if it was GHB, how much is, like, a liter, is that a lot?
I think when I used to buy GHB, I used to get it in either 100 or 200 mil balls. But I don't know what concentration that was at.
Okay. So this, but in general, this is about a gallon?
I wouldn't say it's a huge amount. Okay. I mean, a liter is 1,000 milliliters. So 4 liters is a gallon. So yeah, you just show up a gallon.
You're not really selling much, then, is what it, like, that's not going to be like a, you're not, that's not like a kilo of Coke or something. You know what I mean? You're not breaking that down and distributing that to a 500 people.
No, I wouldn't have thought that would be a huge amount of, unless its concentration is very high, and as a result, you know, it could just maybe be a highly concentrated form that then is diluted down to make more. I don't know.
Okay. During the search, so they searched this guy's place. Officers seized $5,000 in cash, 2 mobile phones, and electronic equipment. Investigators seized GBL and anabolic steroids, as well as equipment consistent with the supply of prohibited drugs. So a 42-year-old man was arrested and taken to King's Police Station, charged with 15 offenses, including importing a commercial quantity of border-controlled drugs, intentionally importing prohibited Tier 1 goods, import prohibited imports times 6, supply prohibited drugs, and deal with property proceeds of crime. Huh.
Yeah, that sounds like he's going to get fucked.
Yeah. 15 charges, Dave. 15 charges.
Well, take note, it was an organized crime investigation as well, which obviously are the more serious boys when it comes to these things.
They got to make it worth their while, right? Like, they got to... You know?
Well, yeah, he's obviously got some asset, because it mentioned about a proceeds of crime order on the bottom of that. So he's obviously got asset they're going to go after as well. So they must have something that they feel is worth seizing financial wise.
Oh, that's what that means. They're going to try to, like, take his home or something.
Cars or whatever, maybe, yeah.
I feel like once they have you, they're going to try to go after everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that can be in your favor. Because they go for the bigger hit, which they can't support, and then they lose the case.
Okay.
Where they went for the smaller hit that they could support, you get done on a lesser charge, but you still get done.
Ooh, one bright note here. A French bulldog that resides at the residence was not harmed during the operation and remains in the care of friends. That's a last note. I like that.
Yes. I'm surprised they've even mentioned it. It seems a bit of a strange thing to mention, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, we beat the shit out of him, but the dog was fine.
And then we made, like, Instagram videos with the dog. Those dogs, have you ever seen those, I think there's one I follow called Frenchie Loves You. And it's, like, little French bulldogs doing, like, howling. And they're doing, like, those dogs shouldn't even exist, Dave. They literally, like, they're basically... as manipulated as they could be. They can't even breed properly. You have to, like, all of them are cesarean section.
Bulldogs are the same.
Are they?
Bulldogs can't shag.
Oh, really?
It's an art form getting a bulldog to mate, mate. Yeah. I'm more concerned about you watching a YouTube channel about French bulldogs. And not only a YouTube channel, but like a cutesy YouTube channel about French bulldogs. Is this your inner 11-year-old girl coming out here?
Oh, if I had a French bulldog, well, put it this way, this show would be called French Bulldogs and Stuff. that's all it would be. It would be about my dog. He'd be like in my lap the whole show. We'd be interviewing him, having him do tricks.
Would you have little clothes and outfits for him?
You better believe it. In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. We'd be like a different outfit for every episode.
People, are you hearing this?
And it would be a tax write-off. Man? It would be a tax write-off too, Dave, because it would be for the channel. All right, I've got another story here. Last story, and then I've got a question for you, Dave. This is going to be a quick mention. We're going to blow through these stories. We've got Dave's got a mind-blowing topic, and then we've got a bunch of your listener questions. Just a quick note. I've seen this in several places now. There's a prediction that there's going to be an increased demand for anabolic steroids and a surge of revenue through 2020. Let's see. Here we go. So you know, they explain what anabolic steroids are. And then they say that incident in geriatric population drives the androgen and androgenic steroid commercial center as more men are susceptible to hypogonadism. Also ascend in weight issues in men propels the overall androgen and steroid market. Let's see, growing negative health status, specifically within developing countries, is projected to fuel growth of the marketplace during the forecast period. Besides, rising government ventures for higher human services is attributed to the growth of overall androgens and anabolic steroid market. Basically, they're saying that there is an increase in occurrence of hypogonadism among men, and this is anticipated to enlarge the worldwide androgen and anabolic market. So they believe this is saying that there is going to be an increase, and it makes sense to me.
They're talking about a TRT boom, though.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And TRT-related drugs.
It's definitely growing. I've seen a growing demand over here. I'm actually in the moment looking at potentially setting up a online TRT clinic.
Do it.
But, well, it's complex over here. They don't like you doing it. So there's a lot of loopholes and stuff now. But I'm looking at doing it with somebody else who's almost pretty much there. But we'll see.
If you get it going, can I join A and B? How many grams of Tren will you supply me with per week?
I supply you with non-grams of 10.
I've done it then. I don't.
At all.
I'm not interested in this then.
No. This is going to be a professional service for TRT, not a legitimate source for gear, you roid head.
Tren replacement therapy, TRT.
No. Testosterone. Going back to the subject at hand, it is a growing market, definitely. The US clinics are booming, the private clinics. The FDA was trying to put pressure on a reduction in TRT to... they were putting pressure on clinics to reduce TRT prescriptions.
Okay.
But it's booming. I mean, it is booming. It's coming over here now. We're starting to see more and more private clinics crop up, and people are so much more aware of the fact that this may be an issue.
Yeah.
And as people become more aware with steroids, they become more aware of testosterone replacement therapies, and that's pushed a private market where the national, particularly in this country, where the National Health Service is quite reluctant to put you on TRT, and they can be quite awkward in the way that they deal with it and in the levels that they want to see before they'll consider you for treatment.
Yeah.
So it's driving a private industry that's growing all the time. And most private clinics would potentially be looking at charging, well, I've seen prices range from £200 to £350 a month.
Wow.
And it seems to be that it's sort of the $200 to $300 a month range in the States as well.
I'm looking, I'm talking to a guy, a company that they're interested in potentially working with us here. And if we do, they offer TRT that's at a really, it's a really good price. They let you bring your own labs too, which I think is great. They don't try to charge you for everything. And it reminds me of like what you would set up, Dave, just like a good, you know, high quality service that's not going to just like be there to just make a buck, but actually to help.
Testosterone isn't particularly expensive.
Yeah.
But what people do, what they do is they package it up. So they'll say, right, you pay, I'm going to say $200 a month, you get free testosterone, you get free needles, you get free syringes, you get free swabs, and you get free drug management, and you get X amount of blood tests a year.
Yeah.
Free. And they package it like that way so that people perceive much greater value for money. One of the issues with saying to people, here's your TRT, do it yourself, is they inevitably mismanage it. And as a result, they're then coming back in 3 months' time with problems and you've got a bigger mess to sort. So I would see that it's probably going to be the private management of TRT that booms rather than the actual purchase or sale of prescription testosterone that's going to boom independently, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see loads of companies setting up selling gear. Legitimately, don't get me wrong, for TRT patients with valid prescriptions.
Yeah.
I think what we'll see more is people cropping up that are going to manage the whole package.
Yeah.
But definitely awareness is growing massively, and that's worldwide, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Definitely worldwide. And modern life does seem to be having an impact on the general testosterone levels of men.
Yeah. We do have, we do have success here in the U.S. With people managing their own, you know, their own injections on a, you know, day-to-day or week-to-week basis that, you know, that they'll be like, hey, here's your, you know, they do labs and they say, okay, take one cc every whatever 2 weeks or whatever the dose is. And then they say, check back with us, you know, in 6 weeks and, you know, stuff like that. So there has been success. It can work. Sure, though, there is room for issues, though. I could see that. Yeah.
I think stateside, you've got a much better and much more long-term established industry. And you've also got very well-educated and very good social media support through Facebook pages and stuff like that, which is actually putting out some very good content. In the UK, that's sadly quite lacking. And I think in other countries where they're just starting to get into this stuff, it'll be a very similar situation. A lot of people that are self-diagnosing TRT do look to the States and do look to the social media boards in the States and the Facebook pages in the States for their information. Hmm. But it can be overly complex very, very quickly.
Yeah, there should be a podcast about drugs and stuff to help.
There should be, mate. Yeah, I think it'd be brilliant if there was actually someone out there that talked about this shit.
All right, let's talk about some real serious stuff here, Dave. Our next topic is a question that was given to you. You showed me this question. You told me it over WhatsApp, and I said, Dave, what's going on with this? And you said, just wait, and I'll tell you on the show.
What was that? I can't remember. Was this the guy drinking his wife's piss?
This is the guy drinking his wife's urine. And this wasn't for like a, was this a sex thing? Like they, because there's people that are into that.
This wasn't golden. This wasn't golden showers, mate. Look, what you do in your own room in your own time is down to you.
I've seen it. Listen, I've clicked on the wrong video before, and I didn't expect the wrong video. I thought I was just gonna. I didn't think that was gonna happen, and then you can't get it out of your head. You can't get it out of your head, Dave.
Well, once it's in your hair, mate, I would imagine it is quite difficult to clean out the smell, yes. And that was a mirror you were looking at. That was not a video channel.
Shout out to Pornhub.
Basically, this guy is doing it to increase his estrogen. If he's serious, I mean, this might have been a piss take. He is doing it to increase his estrogen levels to help prevent him from suffering with COVID-19.
So he doesn't have it?
No. But there's been a bit of study about how elevated estrogen levels could be protectorant for people. So, because what they noticed was that females don't suffer anywhere near as hard as men do when they get COVID.
Yeah.
So there was theory. It was theorized because COVID enters a cell through the ACE in receptors. It was theorized that estrogen has a suppressive action on that. So as a result, women with higher levels of estrogen would be less likely to suffer severely if they got COVID-19. This was countered because they still saw women postmenopausal not getting as harsh of symptoms as men of a similar age. But some people have jumped the gun. They are looking into it. They are genuinely looking into it as whether estrogen would be a viable support mechanism for people with the virus. Some people have jumped the gun and decided that they need to increase their estrogen levels, and this is what this gentleman was doing by drinking his wife's urine.
You ever drink urine for like the, you know, because the supposed health benefits that?
No, but I did know a man that did.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, I was probably only being 19, so it's a long time ago.
Okay.
And he quite proudly proclaimed that he drank his first piss of the day every morning. But he did water it down, but he did drink his first piss of the day every morning.
So, okay, reports dating back to ancient Rome, Greece, and Egypt suggest that urine therapy has been used to treat everything from acne to cancer, and it's been going on for a long time. Ooh, but Dave, I think I just stick with the acne, honestly.
I will send you a sample over and you can try it and see what
you think. Listen, if this was a question, if I was like, Dave, you're going to have this horrible issue with your skin, or you can drink this cup of piss, and it will fix your skin, would you drink the cup of piss? Seriously. Think about
how horrible an issue are we talking with my skin?
We're talking like Dave Crossland allergic reaction in Under Construction.
Are we talking like that puss boil face I had halfway through UC2? Yeah, we're talking about that level.
We're talking like that level. And if you drink the piss, it would go away.
So I have to drink the piss once?
Every morning for a week. It's a serious thing.
Yeah, I would actually.
It would fix it. If it fixed, I would too.
Because that was actually a lot more impacting on my mental health.
Oh, I bet, man.
I hate using that word, but it actually got to me quite a lot, the fact that my skin got so bad.
Dude, I think I told you before, I used retinol on my face. I had acne on my shoulders, and then I was like, oh, this stuff is supposed to be beneficial to rejuvenate your face, your skin. I applied it, got acne from it, and then I thought, like, you just power through, you keep using it. It just got so bad. It changed my skin, man, and I will tell you that it did, like, affect my sense of, like, well-being and the way I saw myself. Like, it does. It can give you depression bad skin.
I've seen people commit suicide over bad skin.
Yeah. That's crazy. I've heard of people that maybe didn't do that but had probably come close as... Like, I mean, people who, like, their lives had changed. Like, they hit puberty. Probably part of it was hormones for them, too, though, I guess. I don't know.
The one I'm thinking of was extreme. I mean, this lad couldn't even lay on his back because there was that much acne and it was that painful.
He would drink the piss.
Yes, he'd probably bathe in the piss, drink it, gargle it, and have smoothies all at the same time. But, you know, I mean, things like that can be incredibly impacting to us in the same way as, you know, I mean, obviously you deal with being ugly every day. I mean, that must have a huge impact on your confidence.
It's tough. It is. It's tough. But I power through.
I'm so proud of you. You do so much for equal rights of ugly people, Scott. It is incredible what you do.
Well, listen, they're saying, because I did a little research this morning for the sake of our show, they're saying that there's potential kidney issues that can arise. You're reintroducing toxins that would have been flushed out of your body anyway. There's some bad stuff that can go on with this. This is not something that that anybody recommends, at least any medical community online.
I don't know if it's true, but I was always told that it was part of Chinese medicine as well. It was something that the Chinese used to believe in at certain times.
Probably.
But But I did think it was to do with you were only supposed to drink a certain amount.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't supposed to be knocking gallons down of this shit. But Jesus, no, like I say, it may have been a piss take, but it didn't come across that way. I really don't think it was. Each to their own at the end of the day. You know, that's what makes a life go round, isn't it?
You know, it's going to be one of those things, though, that like the whole pandemic's going to be over. If this guy doesn't catch the virus, he'll never know. He'll just be like,
he'll swear yeah. blind at the piss, not the virus. Yeah.
And if he does catch it, is he going to drink more? That's the question.
Or would he step up to a more toxic form? You know, if would you go for, right, okay, so I now need pregnant woman urine.
Straight out the tap.
Yeah. Well, I told you before, we're not discussing your sex life on this program.
That's probably also a video that we could look up. I'm not going to add that into the show. We're already not able to monetize this program, but I feel that would... that would probably get us a strike with the YouTube community. So we're going to avoid that. I want to give a quick shout out to Clint. He's watching the show for the first time. He said, man, this is my first time watching live. I've literally listened to every show on the podcast. Thanks, man. We appreciate it. We're going to go to break really quick. We'll be right back. We've got a ton of your questions from the board. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Once again, our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. And Dave, I've sealed the deal with another sponsor. We will also be presented by Azoth, which is a fantastic nootropic product. I've been using their stuff. They have a few different items. I'll talk about
right. Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
How come you get all this shit? Where's mine?
I'll see if I can send some over to you.
So you get all the sponsorships. All right, I appreciate it's your show. Granted and all that. And you do the bulk of the work, if I'm honest, to be fair. You do pretty much all the work. But how come I never get anything?
I'll get them. I'll see if Prady can send stuff overseas. If he can, I would be very curious to see what you thought.
I'd generally be interested in trying a nootropic. I generally would, yeah.
They have a couple things. So they have one, their original product, Azoth, is a nootropic that's it's a blend of a bunch of different stuff, you know, various nootropics put together. They just came up with a new one. It's called Zenamite, and it is mango leaf extract. And it has a lot of the similar benefits as caffeine, but without supposedly without like the side effects that you get from caffeine. Also doesn't give you the tolerance. Zenamite is a that's like the patented name. But anyway, I'm actually going to talk about that with him on a video that we're going to put out pretty soon. Just a little short clip about it. But I've taken it twice so far, and it seems to work. It's a very like it gives me energy, gives me focus without like the same effects of caffeine. So yeah, I'll talk to him though, seriously, because I'd like to get your thoughts about it.
What's wrong with the effects of caffeine? I like the effects of caffeine.
I like the effects of caffeine too, and it actually has a nice synergy with caffeine. So. There is.
Is that. It now? I've seen this before, like stuff with like lion's mane and stuff. If you put it on its own, it has a more of a calming, chill out semi effect. But if you add caffeine to it, it gives you a more up tempo, focused effect. Is this the same?
No. This is actually like it has a caffeine like effect. There are other nootropics that they do use, like in Azoth. There's one of them, I believe. that does have more of like a mellowing effect. And then that way, because, and I had talked to Prady before about that, that, you know, in order to be focused, you also need to be relaxed. So if you're like super high strung and tight, you can't think clearly and creatively. So, but I'll get to her questions here. I will talk to him. Okay. We put up this thread over at the Advices Radio Facebook group. Guys, you're welcome to always join us, you know, ask questions. You can ask here on the live feed. You can ask in the group when we post up threads, and you can ask on the YouTube page. In fact, I better check the YouTube page today to make sure we didn't have anything on the last episode. But I'm going to start with this one. Hey, Scott, do you think there are people in the U.S. who get their standard TRT from a GP, but then also pay with a clinic to obtain more or more for when they want to blast? Seems like since one goes through insurance and one goes out of pocket, they don't communicate with each other. Are there any laws against this or preventing it? I will say, Dave, since I know a little bit about U.S. law with this, being that testosterone is, I believe, a Schedule III drug, they treat it like they would narcotics. I'm guessing that it is regulated very closely. You can't, there's a thing called doctor shopping. You can't go to like one doctor and get Oxycontin and then go to another doctor and get more Oxycontin. They track that stuff. And because it is a scheduled substance, I believe that would be the same case. Do you have any thoughts on this one, Dave?
I would assume it's similar to the UK, yeah, where there is basically a national database that tracks you against your name, date of birth. And over here, we have a medical number. I don't know if you do the same over there. So when you're getting a control drug of any sort, it's registered that you're in possession with that drug.
Okay.
When I was using prednisolone, which was for my kidneys, they tried me on prednisolone for a while, I actually had to carry a card that stated I was using the drug. And I had to carry that with me everywhere I went. But yeah, they over here, it's all tracked through a national database. So if you try to go to your JP and they put you on TRT and then you try to use those home blood results to then use a private clinic, when they went to prescribe that drug, it would come up that you were already under prescription for it.
No kidding. Yeah, yeah. We have a similar type thing here. I don't know if it's for all drugs, but I know that I've gone to, like, I got a, so a couple of years ago when I went back to the dentist and I had a big phobia of going, they gave me some type of a sedative at the dentist. And then when my doctor, my family doctor, went to go give me refills, that came up on the list of drugs that I use. And so she had access to that. But once again, though, that was probably a controlled substance. I don't know if, like, if I got an antibiotic from the dentist, if that would show up on the list.
I think ours does. But then we're more focused with a national health service, though there is a private health service as well. But so we're less. But then again, an insurance company is not going to want to pay out for a drug if you're already getting it, are they?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would suspect there are plenty of controls in there. Then the only way around it would be if you had a doctor that was cooking the books a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no doubt they exist, because you'll find somebody in every industry that's willing to bend the rules.
Yeah. All right, I'll go to the next question here. Not sure if you've covered this before, but how about drugs like DECA and its effects on cholesterol and such?
As far as I'm aware, there is no greater impact from DECA on cholesterol than there is with any regular injectable steroid.
Okay. So there would be basically steroids are relatives of cholesterol is necessary to create them. They are relatives of it. So they will impact your cholesterol. DECA would do
increase
the same.
Increase your LDL. Predominantly, it would increase your LDL,
okay.
Or your total cholesterol.
Okay.
But I don't see there being any specific. I mean, what we do see is, particularly with orals, that we see a reduction in HDL.
Yeah.
We don't tend to see a huge reduction in HDL off injectables, but there is some. So I don't see how DECA would be any different to the other compounds. I've never actually physically looked at the individual injectables and their individual impacts on cholesterol. I don't even know if the data's there, to be honest.
Okay. Let's see. We've got one here. It says pros and cons of running low-dosed tren alongside with test at 250 milligrams per week long-term as opposed to blasting tren at a higher dose for less time.
I am very much of the belief, and this I feel is borne out anecdotally, that you have a Chinese water effect. So a small amount of toxicity, bearing in mind that, you know, tren is, as we've discussed on numerous occasions, the badass when it comes to fucking things up in your body.
Yeah.
That a small amount will eventually create the same problems that a large amount would over a short period of time.
Okay.
Now, research-wise, we have seen that tren will cause levels of brain cell damage in the brain on par with Alzheimer's. But yeah, that research wasn't dose-specific.
Yeah.
What I have seen is that people that run tren and have regularly run tren, that they will report that they were okay with it for several cycles, and then on this one particular cycle, and it wasn't necessarily that they were running a high dose, in fact in a lot of cases they were running a lower dose than they'd run previously, they suddenly then started to have problems, and those problems have remained ever since. So I would suspect that if you try and get away with running a low dose long term, you will ultimately end up in the same problem that you would do with a high dose short term.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like to an extent, you know, there's benefit. You know, the longer you run a cycle, I think that there's other side effects like the thickening of blood that can occur. So even if you're using moderate doses, there are other side effects that could arise. But I feel like that those are easier to track and mitigate versus a side effect that creeps up overnight, you know?
The problem with tren is, in most cases, that when you trigger anxiety or you trigger paranoia or you trigger those trend sides,
yeah,
they tend to then stay irrespective of whether you're taking the drug or not.
Yeah.
They lessen, but they tend to have a residual effect.
I agree.
And when I've done, and these are very simple, basic surveys of just, you know, stick a couple of questions up and throw it out on Facebook and see what people come back. But over 50% of people that use tren have come back and said that they've been left with long-term anxiety and issues.
No kidding.
Around those subjects, even though they no longer use tren anymore.
Huh, no kidding.
And that bears out with the studies as well, that the damage done is permanent after a certain point.
I guess I'm lucky. Because I experienced anxiety from tren. And then I backed the dose down and it went away. But like, I guess I'm lucky, you know?
Well, it's like with a lot of things, isn't it? You know, it's always going to be person and dose dependent. You know, in the same way we have people that are sensitive to estrogen or sensitive to peanuts or whatever,
yeah,
you're going to have people that effectively will be sensitive to different types of drugs.
Absolutely.
I'm allergic to plasters.
To what? Plaster?
Yeah.
Like the wall?
Yeah. No, Band-Aids.
Oh, okay, okay.
Sorry, I'll speak Americanese. Band-Aids.
You call them plasters over there, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, I had a question for you.
Go on, man.
Being from the UK, I figured you might know, first of all, have you ever visited Stonehenge? A.
Yes, I have.
And B,
I actually had a private tour.
Who made it?
Who made it?
Yeah, who do you think made it?
The lizard gods.
For real. Who do you think made it? Because you've been there, you thought about this one.
I was lucky enough, because they've now, you're not allowed to the inner circle anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was lucky enough to actually get a private tour and be allowed to go into the inner circle and touch the stones.
Damn.
It's a very strange place.
Do you get a weird vibe from it?
Yeah, you do. You genuinely do. It is odd.
Huh.
It's got a very, there's only one other place I've been to that had a different impact, granted, but that sort of strange impact on the way I felt being there, and that's Culloden up in Scotland, which I'll explain in a minute. I'm pretty certain it was built by ancient Britons, and it is some form of religious or worship type, maybe not a singular god, or may even be a celestial thing in the way of, you know, worshipping the sun or worshipping the seasons or whatever. But I do think it's something to do with that. Yes.
All right. Hold on to the other place you're talking about. We'll make sure to get to that. I wanted to go a little off track for a minute because I forgot. If I didn't ask you now, I'd forget. So I figured I'd throw it in. Question from Kane. How much will your test levels go up by adding 500 milligrams a week of HCG? I think he means 500 IU a week of HCG to your TRT.
I wouldn't thought you'd see a massive increase in your total testosterone in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I'm more or less certain you won't see a change in your total testosterone.
Really?
But I think what you will see is a change in your ITT.
What's that?
Intertesticular testosterone.
Really? So, okay. Well, how does that affect you then? Because will you notice a difference?
Generally, people will just feel that little bit more. It helps with fertility. It helps with sperm production, definitely. Oh,
okay, yeah.
And it does seem to help with libido. Bear in mind that we produce HCG as well, and obviously that gets shut down when we go on a TRT or we go on anabolics anyway.
Yeah.
So, but my understanding is I don't think it'll have a huge impact on total. It may raise it a couple of points. I have no idea by how much of it does. Maybe someone that's watching that's got more experience with HCG on TRT can give us their own experiences of how much they've seen it rise.
Yeah.
But I know it has a big impact on ITT, and generally why it's added into TRT is to help with that for fertility reasons.
Okay.
Testosterone within the testes does have a direct impact on the Sertoli cells and sperm production.
Sure.
But by how much it's going to punk it up, I'm not so sure.
Well, best thing he could do is give it a try, right? And see.
I mean, if you're fully suppressed, then obviously, technically, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever because you're not going to produce any more testosterone because your inhibins are not going to allow it to happen. But I know it does impact ITT, intercontinental testosterone.
All right. Let's see. Best compounds besides test to include in almost every cycle with low medium health impact. I think Masteron has similar opinion. Plus is oh, he's got another question, so I guess we'll cover that one first and then I'll get his other question.
Low impact in steroids, you've got two levels of impact. In fact, I had this conversation with somebody last night. You've got physical and you've got mental. So Primo, pretty much low impacting with both. Mast, generally low impact physical, however, will have impacts in prostate and stuff like that because it's a DHT.
Yeah.
And prostate reacts to DHT. Deca, very, very good on the physical, bit of a twat on the mental. Tren, shit on both. EQ, bit of a mixed bag with EQ. I find, I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of EQ, but
yeah.
If your blood levels are relatively low, then you'll probably get on with EQ quite well. If you're an experienced user that's already running their blood levels sort of at the top end of range, then I think you'll find EQ problematic.
David John, he said we had this conversation last night. Was that with you?
Could have been. I've no idea.
Okay. His other question was, is binge eating really a disorder or it's normal that you want to take a break like once a month, even if your diet works great?
That would be down to the severity of your binge eating. I mean, I don't know if it's as bad now, but there was a period of time, particularly over here, where excessive cheat days and cheat meals were almost celebrated and people were literally trying to hit 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 calories of shit in one day.
Yeah.
That is an eating disorder by every definition in every nutritional book in the world. But having a day off diet, eating a bit of shit, no, I wouldn't class that as an eating disorder. But if you were taking it to extremes and you're making it a personal challenge to see how much cookie dough you can get down in one day,
yeah,
then I would suggest that that could be regarded as an eating disorder, yes.
You know what I've noticed, having coached now for a decade, worked with such a variety, you see a big cross-section of people. And I can speak just from my own personal experience too, that the people that are more obsessive in life tend to be the people that are more likely to, I feel like you can almost develop an eating disorder through bodybuilding. I think that some people love bodybuilding because they love the ability to control things and plan their day out. And a big part of that is your nutrition. And I feel like it's some of those people that as you diet, if you're going to get into contest shape, there's going to be a point that you get very hungry. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much food you can still continue to eat while you're dieting. If you get to, low single digit body fats, there's something I believe that happens in your brain. And it's not like I've read this. I just feel like my brain wants to keep me awake and keep me moving and keep me thinking about food and keep me hunting and gathering because it thinks it's going to die, really. It's giving my body all the signals to say, holy shit, my body's giving it the signals to say, you're dying, you're dying right now. You need to get food in you. And I think that it's from there that some negative things can definitely occur. And in my thought, I almost feel like people could develop an eating disorder if they already have like disordered eating and then they start dieting really hard and get to that phase and they're really hungry.
Vicky Masita, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
She has a large number of clients that come to her because they've developed eating disorders or they have eating disorders within their bodybuilding or training.
Not shocked at all.
Yeah, she does a lot of work with people with that. Definitely. And I think this industry, this sport, this pursuit can really cause mental health problems in lots of different areas, not just in food,
sure,
but definitely in food. And I tend to think as well that the more someone is a control freak, or the more someone is obsessed with being in control, the more likely they are to go banzai, yeah, when they break that control.
Yes.
Where if someone is much less concerned about control, they don't tend to have that strong opposite reaction to that.
Yeah.
They don't tend to go off on the rails when they do.
Yeah.
When I used to follow a diet and train and do all that sort of stuff many years ago when I was a young man before your time, yoni boy, I must admit my cheeks were fucking epic.
Yeah.
And it was a direct almost response to the fact that my diet had been so tight that I would go the opposite way when I had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I sort of calmed it down and it got less extreme. And because all I did was eat loads of shit, then sit there and moan for the next 4 hours how shit I felt and how bloated I was and how ill I felt because I'd eaten loads of shit. And it was like, why do you keep doing this to yourself?
Yeah. There's that, the instant, we talked about this not too long ago, but there's like that instant gratification thing of eating the food and filling that void. But yeah, in reality, that you're not going to really fill it until you're, 15, 20% body fat.
The more I got on, the more I found that the actual traditional shitty cheat meals appealed to me less.
Yeah.
And it just, because I just felt so crap afterwards.
Oh, here's one. Kind of relates. I'm going to skip down a question. Post-show rebound off-season and off-season, how does Dave like to handle the rebound period for someone coming out of a prep to gain the most amount of muscle possible?
Slowly.
Yeah.
I just reverse diet. I do believe, I understand the desire to have a blowout, and I would normally say have one.
Yeah.
And then maybe have a couple of days where you've got a more relaxed diet, but then after that, get back on it. Because the simple reason is to try and control and manage water rebound and things like that, which are, to be quite honest, in some cases, quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And then just reverse a diet and just slowly start to bring the foods back up. It can be quite rapid in the sense that you might get up to a decent amount of food within 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably won't be as slow as it was you getting down to those low level of foods. But and then once you're up to full food, then I would look at structuring a cheat meal, because at that point, that influx of shitty food is not going to cause a massive water retention rebound that you're going to get if you do just post show.
Yeah. He asks a lot of specific questions here. Some of them I think would be dependent on the individual. But I will ask, so you're in your rebound phase, and now your goal is to try to start gaining muscle. During this period, are there any supplements that you would consider most necessary or helpful?
If your diet's balanced, then most sort of vitamins and minerals should be taken care of. I would say that a GDA would be very useful. You're already going to be quite primed and insulin sensitive, yeah. So let's just maximize that for as long as we can.
Okay.
Other than that, no. And the one thing I've never understood is people jumping on cycle post-show.
Yeah.
You're going to have a natural growth period there. You're going to if you have physically PCT and you're able to PCT, you're still going to have a huge growth period there off the back of the comp.
Sure.
Because you're going to naturally rebound.
Sure.
So I would use that period, use that rebound, maximize it, and then throw the drugs in when you start to stall out. If you're a cruiser, then just simple TRT.
Yeah.
And let your body just naturally come back. If you manage the rebound diet quite well, you'll probably find at the end of your rebound diet, you're holding as much, if not more, muscle mass in better condition than you were when you started your previous diet. Then add a cycle in when things start, the natural curve flattens off.
Yeah. What about split? I'm guessing he's talking training split. Does he have a preferred split for putting on size? I know we talked about this one before.
We talked about this a lot. Yeah, 3-day split, 3-on-1-off.
3-on-1-off. So that's
everything twice.
Okay. Can NPP, even in doses as low as 300 milligrams per week, cause Decadic symptoms even when adequate test is used, such as 450 per week? What is the underlying mechanism for this response? I'll say I don't think 300 is super low for NPP.
No. And the issue here is that there is really no such thing as Decadic.
What?
No. There is mismanagement of drugs causing erectile dysfunction, yes.
Okay.
But you do not take Deca and automatically have problems with the old man.
Yeah.
So the problems arise when you mismanage the drugs you take, because one, you don't understand how the drugs work in your body and what they cause, or two, you're not checking your bloods to see what your hormones are doing. So Decadic can be caused by effectively three things: high prolactin, high estrogen, or low DHT and high DHM. Deca converts to DHN. It is not as effective as DHT. So if your test dose is way too low or you're running a Deca-only cycle, you run the risk of getting into that problem. It doesn't happen for everybody. Some people, it's a period of as it will be okay for a certain amount of time, then it will kick in. But they're your three mechanisms. But the only one that's exclusive to Deca is DHN.
Yeah.
The rest can be caused by testosterone and other steroids as well. So it's not exclusively that your erectile problems are down to Deca. It could be a combination of your total drug use. It could be that you've got problems with your estrogen levels. You've got problems with your prolactin level. So the first thing to do is check your bloods.
Okay.
See where you are, and then you can put effective management in. I believe that every single person that starts a cycle at 3 to 4 weeks should check their hormone levels, and then they can effectively manage the effect of the drugs on their hormones.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've seen people too. I don't think, because he mentions, he said with adequate test at 450 milligrams, 300 MPP. I've seen people that have run, you know, a lot of tests, say 700, 800, 1,000 milligrams, added in 400 Deca and still had issues. So I don't think that there is necessarily like a perfect ratio that is going to fix it, you know, regardless. I think it is going to be dependent.
The issue isn't directly caused by Deca. The issue is caused by the fact that you're not managing your hormones.
I agree.
You know, that's my argument. Maybe I'm being a bit deliberately awkward there.
Okay.
but I don't like this where people put the blame on the drug. The blame is on your mismanagement of the drug or your misuse of the drug. It's not the drug.
Yeah.
You know, drugs have effects. We know those effects. If you fail to manage those effects, then whose fault is it?
Yeah. All right, here. Let's see. Couple of PED questions for a change of pace. LOL.
Why can't someone ask us about fashion or you know, I don't know, something else?
Okay, so I guess this is kind of related. Is NPP an alternative to DECA regarding prolactin issues? No. Faster esters make a difference? No.
Not particularly.
I mean, there's going to be less buildup, right?
Yeah, but you've still got that natural process of the nandrolone impact in the body. But, I mean, what a lot of this is where a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah.
They go on testosterone, right? They don't think to check prolactin because they're on testosterone.
Okay. Yeah?
But their prolactin might be running at 300, might be running at 400.
Yeah.
They go on test and DECA, and because they're on DECA, they check their prolactin, and the prolactin's running at 400. I had a set of bloods coming yesterday from a guy on test only, and his prolactin was 562.
Wow.
He's not on any DECA. But because we don't expect prolactin to rise when we're not on DECA, we don't check it.
Yeah.
And in fact, all steroids can increase prolactin quite significantly.
Yeah.
It isn't exclusive to DECA and TREM. But I've lost my track then. Sorry, brain went blank.
It's all the DECA you've taken.
It is, definitely. Definitely.
All right. Well, we do have a couple more, so I'm just going to power forward then. Most effective oral to accompany this stack for growth, 750 test. Looks like he's saying he's interested. He's saying Anadrol, D-ball, Superdrol,
Oxy, definitely.
Yeah, you're a fan of Oxys.
I like Oxys.
All right. Have you experienced any weird dreams while on PCT? I have bizarre and intense dreams every time that I go on PCT. He's just using Clomid and Tamoxifen.
Any hormonal changes can trigger weird dreams, without a doubt. So, you know, I personally haven't, but I'm sure plenty of people have.
Yeah. I don't think I can't remember if I had. No, I got the vision issues from Clomid.
Division issues?
Yeah, you can see like tracers, trails.
Oh, vision issues. Yeah. You said division.
No, vision.
Yeah, you know what that is, don't you?
No, I don't.
Because it blocks the eastern receptor in the eye.
That's right. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've thought about it. Mm. Yeah, you know, in fact, I think I was working with somebody who started getting that. We just backed it down.
Novadex can do the same as well.
Yeah, it's weird. It was weird. I heard it could be permanent, but I read on the boards.
I have had a rapid decline in my eyesight over the last 2-3 years.
Also from the DECA.
But both my parents wore glasses, so I don't know if there is any link or not. But my eyesight did drop quite significantly quite quick.
Huh.
And I'm now, even in the last 6 months, I've gone from wearing glasses to do certain things to pretty much wearing glasses all the time.
You've always got them on now, every show. When we started, you didn't.
No, yeah, so there you go.
Let's see here. We've got a couple more. I don't know if we can answer this one. Kirkland, because we're not big oxytocin connoisseurs. Would intranasal oxytocin still provide the same anabolism to bone via the BMP2 pathway? Does Dave see any dangers to the use of oxytocin? You know, Kirkland, because you had asked about this, about oxytocin before, he works with Carl Lenore. You know, Carl's talked about oxytocin a bunch. In fact, we had him on one of our shows for a few minutes.
Well, surely Carl's a much better person to ask that question.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not our wheelhouse, I think. That's what I'll say.
No, I would suspect that there's the only issue through a nasal would be a slight reduction in bioavailability, but I wouldn't have thought that it increases any risks.
Yeah.
But I don't know for definite.
Yeah.
It's not. I'd looked at it when we spoke with Carl. I've not looked at it since, and I can't even remember what the fuck I looked at now.
You know, I've seen intranasal BPC 157 now.
Well, I mean, it's access routes through the blood vessels, isn't it? So,
I mean, you could take it orally.
There used to be a time when everything... Do you remember when everything was sublingual?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a big trend towards everything being sublingual.
You could get like a lot of sublingual gear, even oral tablets and stuff, or you know, sublingual tablets. Got one more here. Any ways to combat or deal with hand numbness increasing to elbow pain while using elevated doses of GH? I have a guy who is using pharmaceutical GH right now for the first time, and he's dealing with this.
Don't use as much GH. I don't really know what else to say on that one.
Well, you don't recommend high doses of GH anyway, right?
No, but if it's causing you issues like that, that pain will be driven by nerval entrapment, I would suspect, if it's radiating up into your elbow.
Yeah.
And it's fluid in the joints and swelling. So, you know, I would just reduce the dose. Otherwise, you're just going to end up running other compounds like diuretics to try and deal with it, which are going to be counterproductive in other areas.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to tell Brent. I'm going to tell him this. I'm going to say, first of all, I would stop the growth altogether right now. Stop it until the pain goes away. Give it another several days after that. And then I don't know. He doesn't say what his high dose was, but I would do is I would start with just one unit a day. And I'd stick with that one unit for 2 weeks, see what you get. If you get any elbow pain, any pain from there, wrist pain, then just keep it at that dose. Don't go any higher. See if you can ride it out. And eventually what I found is that the pain will go away. And then from there, add another half a unit. And then stick with that for another 2 weeks. See how that goes. And you can slowly climb it up. A lot of times I think people just think like, oh, I've got all this growth. I'm going to start running 5 units a day. And then they immediately have problems. When if you take it low and build it, you're a lot less likely to have problems. So that's just my 2 cents on it.
No, that seems perfectly viable. I have no issue with that one at all.
And I'm with you, Dave. I wouldn't run a ton. I don't think there's any reason to go above, say, 4 units. I think that's plenty. Mm-hmm. I know guys that are coaching very high-level pros, and they say the same advice.
There's been a definite trend change in growth hormone use.
Agreed.
More and more people are very, it's not necessary, it will help with condition, it doesn't have a huge impact on muscular growth, and that seems to have really moved through the industry now. There's obviously people that still think that the old, was it Jay Cutler that said that the only thing with growth is just as much, how much you can afford or something?
I've heard multiple people say that.
Yeah. GH15 was a big one for saying shit like that with his trembolone sandwiches, wasn't it?
I think he also was selling, so.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so let's wrap this thing up by telling me your story, Dave, about this place in Scotland.
Right, there is a place in Scotland called Culloden. Culloden. And Culloden had a large battle, and it was part of the Highland Clearances.
Okay.
So this was when the Lowland Scotlanders joined with the English to go and kick the arse of the Highland Scotlanders.
Oh.
And at the Battle of Culloden, they wiped out entire clans. So women, kids, everybody. The battlefield you can't go on, how they actually fought a battle in that field, I don't know, because it's got holes in it, like, you know, 3 foot deep. It would be a job just to be able to walk across it.
Huh.
But the area has a visiting center, and then there's these cairns, these piles of stones that represent the clans that are buried underneath them.
Oh, shit.
I have never been to a place that feels like death.
Ew.
Like that. It is horrible. It really is horrible. You walk around there and you feel uncomfortable. You feel miserable. You feel deep sorrow. It is a really weird place.
Sounds like a great vacation, Dave.
It's something that I think is a very worthwhile experience.
I'm going to spend my money to fly to Scotland so I can feel horrible.
Yes, but then I've heard people say the same thing about going to Auschwitz and places like that, that they have this horrible feeling of great loss and sorrow when they're there.
I've heard people say the same thing when they listen to our show.
Well, yeah, most people say that when they talk to me, full stop. So, I mean, it's just I just seem to radiate it for some reason. It's your fault. It's you. I've told you. You need to wear a mask, but you won't.
I get what you mean. I get what you mean. It's an experience.
It is. It's a very strange place. It really is. It's eerie as fuck. Yeah. It's really odd. And Stonehenge was a very similar, but not in a negative manner. It was a very odd sensation.
Yeah.
I just happened to be lucky, but it was definitely a good experience.
You're a big guy, Dave. You said your grandpa was a big guy.
I wonder
if it was like you, there's somebody down the road, the Crossland lineage moved those stones around. Because I feel like you'd be the guy I'd ask. Like, Dave, will you line these stones up over there for me?
Yeah, they're some big chunks of rock, are them.
Yeah.
But then look at the pyramids. Look at the size of pieces of stone that's been used to build them.
Yeah.
They were put in manhandle.
Aliens.
Definitely aliens. Definitely. The moon is definitely a space station, and we have lizards living upon us.
Yes, sir. And on that note, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. Check out crosslands.org.uk, and of course, check out our sponsor, truenutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES, and we'll be talking more about Azoth here in the future. We'll see you guys later.
Bye.